Half a minute past 8 o'clock. Bob Potter here with Gary Ikton as we wrap up this live coverage today, Gary.
Well, indeed, Bob. The one stop that Soviet President Gorbachev didn't make was at the Brand Farm down by Farmington. That was supposed to symbolize, if nothing else, the Soviet interest in American agriculture and the interest of farmers in our country in getting at that Soviet market. And Mary Lozier has been looking into that part of the visit.
When asked what he sees as the significance of Gorbachev's visit to the Midwest, Iowa agribusinessman John Kristol spares no superlatives.
It is an economic opportunity for Iowa and Minnesota, the likes of which they haven't seen since the Great Depression, because what's happening is that they're going to be able to sell their machinery and systems and know-how to a country of 280 million people. Sixth of the world's surface. It's like Columbus discovering a new economic America.
Kristol, a candidate for governor of Iowa and a longtime friend of Gorbachev's, says about 30% of all the food in the Soviet Union spoils before it reaches the table. He says the Midwest is in a prime position to sell the expertise and technology to improve that situation.
Anything in food processing, anything in quality control, anything in storage, drying, processing, any kind of meat processing, refrigeration, trucking, well, you just name any machine that touches food between the table and the farm.
Traditionally, the vast majority of farm trade with the Soviet Union has been sales of raw commodities such as corn and wheat. Barney Saunders, past vice chairman of Cargill, was instrumental in opening the Soviet Union to U.S. grain back in the early 60s. He says in the short run, he thinks the bulk of sales will continue to be raw commodities.
Well, I think the biggest opportunity for Midwest agriculture is the fact that that it's going to be some time before the Soviets are at all capable of feeding themselves, if ever. And, of course, they are going to, therefore, continue to be an enormous market for Midwest agriculture.
But Saunders says Cargill is exploring joint ventures with the Soviets in areas such as corn processing and meat packing. The company is currently working on a joint venture for a soybean processing plant. Any widespread purchases of ag technology by the Soviets will depend on the success of Gorbachev's economic reforms, which must still gain widespread support in the Soviet Union. But University of Minnesota grain marketing specialist Stan Stevens says for American farmers, at least, there may be a downside if Soviet reforms succeed.
To the extent you're optimistic about the reforms that are underway now being successful, I think you have to become pessimistic about the ability of the U.S. and others to sell to the Soviet Union. Their agriculture has been their problem, and if they solve that problem, I think they're going to be lesser customers for us.
Some American farmers say that if the Soviets improve their production of grain to feed their people, there will still be a market for grain to feed livestock as the Soviets begin to eat more meat. But Stevens doesn't hold out much hope for that. He says the Soviets could greatly increase their meat supplies just by improving their efficiency.
They currently, at least the data that I look at, show that the Soviets are consuming just as much coarse grain, or feedstuffs, I should say, as we do to support our livestock industry. It's just that they're only half as efficient. Just as much coarse grain consumed by livestock, but only half as much meat and similar products produced. So if they adopt our technology, our corn, soybean ration that's so efficient in hog and poultry rations, the efficiency is going to go a long way toward improving their diets without necessarily buying from us.
But whether the Soviets will succeed in reforming their ag system is still far from certain. University of Minnesota ag economist Karen Brooks says the Soviet Union faces enormous problems in reforming their agricultural sector.
Some people look at this problem and just throw up their hands and say, agriculture in the Soviet Union has become so distorted and it's got so many problems, both technical, environmental, economic. It can't be approached as too big a problem. I don't think that's true. I think it's possible to put together a program that would comprise the policy framework for the agricultural transition, but it has to be done, and I don't yet see it happening in the Soviet case.
Brooks says Gorbachev's visit to the Midwest is largely symbolic, but nonetheless important.
He can identify with the strengths of our agricultural economy, again, in the areas of commodity production and trade, processing and agricultural research, and symbolically relay to the Soviet people that these are the areas that we'd like to move in. This is the kind of successful agricultural future that we're trying to work toward. And then he can go back home and do the hard work of trying to put it together.
University of Minnesota ag economist Karen Brooks. I'm Mary Lozier.
Well, let's go out to the Air Force Reserve Base again, Mike Mulcahy. And Mike, what's the latest?
Well, Gary, coming well on the heels of that piece about farming, it looks like the Brand family now is out on the runway. There's going to be some kind of a ceremony here because President Gorbachev couldn't make it to the farm. Apparently, they're going to exchange some gifts here. There's about 3 dozen people out there, really, and I see Agriculture Commissioner Jim Nichols is out there as well. They're kind of lining them up now and getting them ready to take pictures, I suppose. I should also mention that for the first time all day, the sun has finally come out. It's begun clearing in the west, and it's making quite a nice picture, actually.
Maybe that's what those Nintendo turtle gum things are for. Maybe she's going to give that to the little kids at the Brand family. I don't know.
That could be. Now a line of dignitaries has started moving out onto the runway as well. See St. Paul Mayor Jim Scheibel, Peter Popovich, Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, D.D. Wozniak with the Court of Appeals, and a number of others. There's Robert Gavin representing the Private College Council, Harold Stassen, Nils Hasselmo.
Mike, didn't they split up the duties? Some people got to greet him, some get to send him off. Isn't that how that worked?
Absolutely. There's the congressional delegation. That's 10 members. And then they've been kind of interchanging another 14 or so to add up to 24 to greet him and 24 to say goodbye. Now, August Wilson was supposed to be in this crowd, too, and I don't see him out there. I don't know if he couldn't make it or if he'll be out a little later or not. I guess we'll just have to see about that. And President Gorbachev's motorcade as well still hasn't shown up here. I believe that they must be near here now, but they haven't actually come out by the plane yet.
It shouldn't be too far away. They had a picture from the pool video a little while ago of the motorcade kind of making its way around the big curve there on 494. That is 494, isn't it? Or 5, I guess, where it's
sure.
494 splits off. Right?
And I can say again that, as you'll recall, way back when this whole thing started, it seemed like air traffic settled down and there wasn't any other planes coming in or out of the airport. And it looks like that's happening again. I've noticed now that there hasn't been a plane take off or land for a few minutes here. There are a couple of helicopters hovering above here in the sky. I think one is with the State Patrol. The other may be a TV helicopter. I'm not sure.
Mike, you mentioned that Raisa Gorbachev is there and has been there for some time. We did not broadcast her appearance with the Watson family live because, of course, we wanted to cover the business meeting that President Gorbachev was having in downtown Minneapolis. But we have an account of what Mrs. Gorbachev did, and she apparently says that she fell in love with that Minneapolis family she was visiting. She went to the home of Steve and Karen Watson in South Minneapolis. The visit was originally supposed to last only about 20 minutes, but because of some changes in the schedule, Mrs. Gorbachev wound up with the Watsons for almost an hour. She and Lola Perpich sat with the Watson family around a dining room table. They all talked about family matters. Afterward, Mrs. Gorbachev told reporters that she fell in love with the Watsons. She posed on the front steps with the family. Why did they choose the Watsons? Well, partly because 13-year-old Lisa Watson performed in Moscow last year in an exchange between the Children's Theater Company of Minneapolis and a Moscow Children's Theater. As she was introduced to the Watsons and their 4 children, Mrs. Gorbachev was cheered by some 6,000 people who crowded onto yards, sidewalks, and streets near the home. So Mrs. Gorbachev had over an hour with the Watsons there and skipped the trip to control data, went right straight to the airport. 10 minutes past 8 o'clock, and I would think, Gary, that motorcade would be getting there pretty quickly now.
I would think so. Say, I have a quick question here for Evelyn. One of the things that struck me as being interesting about the Watson visit, apparently the Soviets made it very clear that they wanted a family with a dog. Don't they have dogs? Or do they all have dogs?
They have dogs.
Why do you suppose the insistence on the dog?
That's a good question. It may help convey a sort of warmth on the part of Raisa that she's not especially well known for in the Soviet Union. May make her seem a little more down to earth. My best guess.
Well, in any case, the motorcade has arrived at the airport, at the Naval Reserve Station, and presumably we will, before long, be hearing from President Gorbachev and the Brand family. They were understandably very disappointed when the Gorbachevs canceled their visit to the farm, and I had a chance to speak with one of the family members who expressed that disappointment, but also said, well, that's kind of the way things happen, and indicated some satisfaction at the possibility of meeting the Gorbachevs. Yes, Mike?
Mrs. Gorbachev now is in full view, waving to the crowd along with Mrs. Perpich. They're walking over to the Brand family now, and she has been shaking hands here for maybe 10 minutes since she arrived, talking to a few other official-looking people now. Maybe they're asking where her husband is, for all I know. I can see some of the lead cars in the motorcade have just come onto the runway here, the security cars. There are five or six police vehicles that have kind of been heading up the motorcade, headed up Mrs. Gorbachev's motorcade as well. Now she's moving in toward the family, shaking some hands again. I wonder if their hands get tired from all this handshaking. They've been in crowds, it seems, almost all day long, with the exception of some of the business meeting and the control data stop.
After the president leaves Twin Cities here, he'll be going to San Francisco, where he has yet tonight scheduled a speech at Stanford University. I should think it is amazing to me, Evelyn, if the man does not have laryngitis after all the speaking he does. he must be very used to it. He will be meeting with President Reagan for breakfast tomorrow, and then he'll also be meeting with the president of South Korea. That's No Tae-woo. That's a fairly interesting development, isn't it?
That's very interesting. It also speaks of the economic interests that he's promoted this entire trip. The Soviet relations with the Third World have really changed during the Gorbachev era. There's been a move away from the countries that we think of as Soviet clients, but the countries that proved to be a drain on the Soviet economy. The kinds of ties with the Third World that Gorbachev has been interested in encouraging are the ties with the NICS, the newly industrialized countries, that have proven very successful in international trade. They're the countries that Gorbachev is interested in dealing with on an economic plane, as well as the countries that he's interested in copying to a certain extent. He'd like to learn something from their economic success in the international economy.
One of the things that I find amazing about everything that has happened in Eastern Europe and in the Soviet Union is that there are just a couple of old-fashioned, hard-line, Stalinist-type states. One of them is Cuba. What do you think Gorbachev is going to do about Cuba?
Can I break in 1 minute first?
Yes, Michael.
I should say that President Gorbachev's motorcade has just arrived now. The cars are just pulling up. His has stopped right in front of the red carpet, which is laid out before the plane. And he's getting out of the car now on our side. The cameras are clicking. The people are applauding. He's looking around, kind of nodding his head. Now he's not pressing the flesh with the crowd, but moving right back toward the plane.
Probably pooped out, I suppose.
That could be, but he's going over to the Brand family, so he's got, as I say, two or three dozen hands to shake there.
There may yet be some sort of public remarks, too. Is that your suspicion, Michael?
Absolutely. There's a microphone set out in front of the plane, just to one side of that red carpet. And President Gorbachev now, we can see him clearly shaking some hands. They're, I think, trying to move him toward that microphone, although it's hard to tell. There's a translator on the conversation, as you might expect. This band is playing, the choir is singing here. Now just a horde of security and press people are moving in from those cars farther back in the motorcade.
Maybe Evelyn David Heiser could just sneak in a sentence about Cuba here, what Gorbachev will do with Cuba.
He's already started to make things a bit harder for them in, as far as terms of payment for Soviet goods go. So on the economic plane, he's moved away from Cuba. But what's interesting is that the countries that have stuck with the hardline Stalinist model are the lesser developed of the communist countries, countries where central planning can still have an impact. It's proven successful in several cases of development in the short run. Then you have to make the switch. So it's not surprising that countries like Cuba are the ones that have stuck with the Stalinist model, but the Soviets aren't going to subsidize them the way they used to.
Mm-hmm. What are they going to do? They're just going to have to make it on their own, or else find somebody else to back them up, I suppose. Mm. 16 minutes past 8 o'clock. Michael, what's going on?
I don't know if you can get any of the audio from the pool in there. I can see Stephen Smith has got his microphone above the Gorbachevs, Mr. Gorbachev at any rate. I see Governor Perpich is waiting at the bottom of the stairs that lead up to the airplane. Has it struck you that he hasn't said too much during this visit?
He hasn't said anything, has he?
Well, he introduced President Gorbachev at the mansion when they were talking about that technology institute.
Oh, that's right.
I was Maxwell
running around in the streets
at the
time.
Yeah. Okay, but that's it. He hasn't said boo other than that.
Whereas,
again, that goes with the economic tone of this whole visit.
Mm-hmm.
Economics, not politics.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Let's see if we can pick up a little of that pool audio feed. It may not be worth it, but let's try just for a second. I hear jet engines. I hear the band in the background.
Maybe Stephen's still having problems with the KGB.
What time did the plane actually land?
The plane actually landed about...
It was about 1:38.
Yeah, 1:38 this afternoon. 20 minutes to 2, yeah. So this trip is really already running 20 minutes late.
And now Mr. Gorbachev is coming to the head of the line of dignitaries, closer to the crowd here. And it looks like he's going to shake some more hands. He's moving down the line toward the direction of the plane.
You have to say, having sat through 7 hours of this or whatever it's been, that it has, by and large, been a very well-orchestrated event. I mean, there haven't been any huge gaps when nothing has happened. It doesn't appear that any of these people have not had any idea what to do. I mean, Gorbachev has always had a fairly clear agenda as he has proceeded to and from these events.
Especially, Bob, when you consider they only had about 4 or 5 weeks to plan the whole thing.
They didn't
know for sure that it was even going to happen a few weeks ago.
Well, and
they say they usually schedule something like this 6 months in advance.
Well, and the fact that the itinerary was not really firmed up until, I guess it was sometime late Friday or early Saturday, and then even today got changed.
Absolutely.
I can see where Mr. Gorbachev was shaking the hands of some of the security people on hand, and I guess they deserve at least a handshake, if not more.
Absolutely.
They joined the line of dignitaries here. He seems to be moving ever closer to the plane, and as I say, the governor, who is standing at the bottom of the stairs into the plane. Now, I had thought they were going to make some remarks at that microphone. I don't know if they've decided in the interest of time not to do that, or if they're still going to try to squeeze that in here.
How about the crowd there, Michael? Does it appear to be quite a large number of citizens there?
I would say 400, maybe. And unfortunately, now, they are down in the lower level, and they can't peek over people's heads like we can at this point. So they seem a little subdued at this right now because they, frankly, just can't see what's going on, I think.
Stephen Smith is with us now from the tarmac via cellular phone. Stephen?
That's right, Robert. President Gorbachev is now saying his goodbyes to First Lady Lola Perpich and the governor. They're shaking hands. He's made his farewells to a line of dignitaries, including the mayors of Minneapolis and St. Paul, former Governor Harold Stassen, presidents of local universities, President Nils Haslemo of the University of Minnesota, Jack Gavin, president of McAllister College. He's now turning to it appears, shake hands with some reporters, and there he's saying goodbye to Jim Nichols, the Agriculture Commissioner of the state of Minnesota. Shook the hand of the cameraman for the state patrol, who's been keeping an eye on things and photographing just about everything that's been going on.
He probably had one of the worst jobs of the day. He was in an open car all day long, just
that's
his
right.
head and
he
his
was,
camera.
That's right, Michael. He was sticking his head up out of the car photographing the proceedings. I understand that the security procedures so that they have a fairly good document of everything that went on.
And, of course, now just minutes before President Gorbachev is going to leave, the sun is coming out, and it's turning quite pleasant out here.
In contrast to the way it was at his arrival, with those cloudy skies, windy, rain, when Gary Acton was up at the Capitol early on, there wasn't but a handful of people up there, was there, Gary?
Very few people, really. And they were, for good reason. It was really unpleasant.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very unpleasant.
As the afternoon wore on, though, the crowd began to fill out both at the governor's mansion and up at the Capitol along the motorcade route. I wonder why these goodbyes are taking so long, Mike or Stephen?
Hard to tell from back here. I don't think brevity is one of the chief Soviet virtues that we've seen up to this point, at least. I think Gorbachev is considered fairly quiet or not as quite ornate a speaker as some of the other Soviets.
Well, now President Gorbachev is stepping up the stairway.
Mrs. Gorbachev
as well. Official airplane.
About halfway up the steps now.
Followed by Mrs. Gorbachev and one of the advisors.
Now he's turning, looking at the crowd and waving. Mrs. Gorbachev is waving. People here are clapping and waving back, waving Soviet flags.
They've turned now, and they're moving into the airplane.
It really is amazing. The president of the Soviet Union has been here in Minnesota.
And now you can hear those engines begin to wind up.
Appears that they're beginning to pull the portable stairway away from the airplane, or will be very shortly.
There are still some people going in. There are two doors to the plane, one up near the cockpit, one in about the middle. Gorbachev used the door in the middle. Some other people are still boarding up front. But the crowds are moving away from underneath the plane fairly quickly here. We can talk a little more about the plane. We asked some of the local aviation officials here about it. They say it's about the size of a DC 727, I should say. Although it is definitely a Soviet plane.
It's a four-engine craft, too, which is kind of interesting. The 727 is a three-engine.
That's right.
This one has two on either side of the tail.
And the folks here said that there are really no commercial jets like that in this country. They said they wanted to get inside the plane to see it, but they didn't have very good access to it.
Well, one wonders from the sound if it would meet those new standards that they have for noise. Wonder if Mike can get close to Governor Perpich there.
I think Stephen is closer right
or
now.
Or Stephen is, all
can,
right.
I don't know if we can get any audio from him. Maybe he can bring us a tape when he's done. We can't get down to the... Actually, it's not tarmac, it's concrete. We can't get down to the concrete runway from here. I can see Stephen is with the governor right now, and they're asking him some questions. Again, that engine noise is really picking up as well now. They've moved the stairways away from the plane.
Oh, listen to those engines spool up. They are loud.
Maybe the governor is still saying goodbye to some people as well. It looks like he's not the easiest interview in the world.
Hear that crowd in the background applauding.
They're waving. They can see some faces in the window. I can't see the Gorbachev.
It looks like Soviet president looking out, waving. That was him, wasn't it?
I think it was.
Like it.
People are waving their Gorby chiefs again. Sort of a corny takeoff on the Homer Hanke idea.
The governor is waving as well. I wonder if Stephen can hear us. Maybe he could steer the governor our way and we could get him on the air.
I don't think so. Not right now, Mike. These people, I didn't think there was going to be any regular people allowed at these ceremonies. They just...
Well, neither did we. And as a matter of fact, as I was saying a little earlier, it came as quite a surprise to us when we were not asked but ordered to move from our space in line. In fact, I tried to argue a little bit, as you might imagine, having waited here 7 hours and They told me I would move or I would leave the base, and I decided that discretion was the better part of valor in this case. I can clearly see President Gorbachev waving from the plane now. I don't know. I wonder what the news value of this is. I'm not sure that there is any other than saying we're here and we're watching it happen.
That's about all that needs to be said right now, I would think. You know, you think about the historic nature of this. Sons come out to see him off.
Kind of a nice symbolic end to the whole thing, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
That plane should begin to move very shortly here. I would assume that it has been... they have cleared away all the airspace and other ground traffic for it, and as soon as...
It's making quite a bit of noise, we know that.
Evelyn, do you get the feeling that Gorbachev likes all this personal contact, or is it mostly a way to kind of keep his political charisma going, keep his name profile high?
Well, it's predominantly the second. I mean, he must be tired after a whole day of this, followed on days of pageantry in Washington. Mm-hmm. I don't think anyone can like it that much.
And then he's got a whole other day of it tonight and tomorrow in San Francisco.
So certainly he worked hard, and it would be beneficial to him if he could convey that to the folks back home. And I keep saying this was basically an economic part to the visit, and he worked very hard to drum up some business for the Soviet Union, to encourage economic ties, and it would be nice if that could be conveyed to the folks back home. That would help him tremendously.
Some of that will depend, of course, on how the event is played in the Soviet media.
Right.
And we understand that about half of the media spaces in the various pools were offered to the Soviet journalists on this trip to Minnesota, but I'm not sure that they all were taken. So I don't know exactly how much coverage this is going to get back in the Soviet Union. Maybe you'll be able to tell us in a few weeks if you get Izvestia or Pravda, and I suppose you do, don't you?
Yes.
How long does it take for it to arrive in the United States?
Well, by the time it gets through the U.S. clearinghouse, the book company that sends it out, sometimes I can get it in a week, sometimes 3 weeks.
I see. All right. Well, the plane is just sitting there on the ground. So far,
it's starting to move.
Now it's beginning to roll. Now it's beginning to roll.
People are waving. The flags are waving. Looking for President Gorbachev. There he is in the window.
Still waving.
Well, I even waved myself. I couldn't help it. You get a little carried away.
I don't see Gary Eichen waving.
I'm just transfixed by this whole thing. I really, I just find it amazing that that clearly probably the most important politician in the world spent the last 7 hours here. Just amazing.
I think we're going to try to get the governor over here. Stephen is directing him our way. I'm going to have to jump down off this truck.
The plane is beginning very slowly to move along the taxiways there at the Naval Air Reserve Station.
They have a Russian pilot and everything, don't they? And then they just have an American advisor to help them.
Absolutely. We saw a Russian crew in there.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to see if we can get the governor over to come on the air. Hi, Governor.
Hi.
Congratulations.
I couldn't see you. I was looking up above.
There's the governor.
What do you think this trip accomplished today?
Well, there are many things. First of all, they were really moved by the friendliness of the warmth of the people along the way. And also at each one of the stops, it was obvious. I really haven't witnessed anything like that in all the years that I've been in the process. I'm talking about Twins, of course. World Series is a different story, but I'm talking about in the political individual, elected official. Oh, well, no.
Are you convinced this is going to lead to some long-term business and economic ties between the U.S. and between Minnesota and the Soviet Union?
It's bound to. The visits that he made, and of course with the business community, which is very, very positive. So obviously, he says during that meeting that those who come there and make an effort are the ones that they're going to deal with in the future. And I think that was a good message for Minnesota businesses. And time again, he mentioned the Minnesota corporate heads by name, the fact that they were there when others weren't there. And that's all positive.
Can you tell us a little more about this Maxwell-funded...
Well, that's Gorbachev-Maxwell Institute of Technology. Mr. Maxwell pledged $50 million over a seven-year period. Dwayne Andreas, it has to be on a matching basis, and Dwayne Andreas matched $1 million of it yesterday. And they want to set that up as a center that would do research and communications and environment.
And you would ask for other corporate citizens and citizens at large to contribute to try to raise that other $50 million?
Well, that's over a seven-year period. The first it has to be $8 million the first year. And he will match that dollar for dollar. And it's a great opportunity for us. It'll take some time before it becomes a center of renown, obviously. But the fact is that he was pursued by Yale, Harvard, I forget the third one, and Minnesota. And he decided on Minnesota. And I think Gorbachev coming is what tipped it over in our favor.
Governor, are you disappointed that there wasn't an opportunity to go to the farm and give the Gorbachev some more rounded picture
but the
of
weather,
Minnesota?
The weather turned bad, and it, you know, when we were driving in, it was just pouring. And I suppose they felt with the number of people they had, and that just is, really makes it difficult for them to tour a farm under those conditions.
What do you think of Mr. Gorbachev personally?
Oh, he's a nice man. That's a beautiful couple. They really are. They're like the people next door. I didn't have an opportunity. I was on the other side. I thought they should be there.
It was an emotional moment when they left.
Pardon me?
It was an emotional moment when they left.
Yes, because they're, like I say, they're just very, very nice people.
As
they
we
really
listen to
are.
The conversation and, with the governor, we note that the airplane is moving down toward the takeoff
woman.
Area.
Mr. Gorbachev.
Did he give you any better sense, Governor, as to why he chose Minnesota and whether he'll ever come back?
I don't know if he'll come back, but I can assure you that many of the Soviets will be coming back here because of the fact that President Gorbachev was here. It's all win-win-win. I mean, it was a good feeling all the way through. They felt good. They liked everything that they saw. Regretted they couldn't see the farm. And they left in the best of spirits.
What's the bottom line for Minnesota now? What did the state get out of this?
Well, we established a... major institute of technology, made some very good contacts for the future in economic development, and just a very warm, fuzzy feeling that the Soviets have of Minnesota, even if it was a cold day. Okay.
Thanks, Governor.
And it looks now like the plane carrying President Gorbachev and Mrs. Gorbachev and the rest of the crew of the entourage is beginning to make its takeoff roll. No, I don't think so. I think they're still on a taxiway. There's quite a distance from the Naval Air Reserve Station there to the main taxiways, and I think it has to snake around quite a bit of airport area on the ground there before it actually gets off the ground. It took it a little while when it came in earlier this afternoon. That was just about... almost exactly 7 hours ago, Gary, that it touched down. I would say within 5 minutes or so of 7 hours exactly.
Gentlemen, can we listen into Mrs. Perpich for a minute?
Absolutely.
So we're very, very pleased.
Would you do it all again?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Sure. Was there an invitation for you to come to the Soviet Union?
Yes. Yes. Whenever. If we decide to come, they would be happy to receive us, so... delighted.
Do you have any plans?
No, I think right now I'm going to go home and clear off my desk and then think about plans like that.
Mrs. Perpich, was there any point in this whole thing when you just thought, this is just too much bother and why even go ahead with this?
No, I really didn't, because everybody with the typical Minnesota spirit, they all just pitched in. They knew we only had 3 weeks and everybody got busy and worked very hard, so
were there any
never.
With the crowd as the crowds were pressing in on everyone?
Not that I noticed. I never felt any tense moments. I think we had enough people out there just making sure everything went smoothly, so if there were any, I didn't detect them, no.
It was nice there, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, fantastic.
Thank you. And there you go. That's Lola Perpich, Minnesota's first lady, talking about this visit. And we'll go back to you.
They've had some long hours.
Oh, they have.
They said they don't regret it, though.
I bet they're awfully glad they didn't sell that house.
Well, we'll see. She said they also had an invitation to go back, as you heard, or to go over to the Soviet Union, and we'll see if they take the Gorbachevs up on that offer.
Well, Governor Perpich has been to the Soviet Union on a number of occasions, and it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if he's reelected that he goes back over there on some sort of a trade mission or whatever. It looks to me like...
I can't see, Bob.
I can't really
see
what's going on down there. I see the tail of the aircraft now. It is still taxiing.
Now it looks like it might be getting ready to roll.
I think it might be getting close to one of the runways there. Let's see.
I have to be honest with you. I can't see from here. I'm behind a crowd. Bill Wareham is standing up on our. Trailer truck here. Bill, can you see the plane?
Mike, I'm afraid I can't see it from here either.
I think it's still rolling. The problem is that it's beginning to get a little bit dark, and I don't think that the television cameras are set for low light conditions like this. It may very well be on its takeoff roll or very, very close to it. I think the fact of the matter is that we have just about covered this thing completely. The plane is very close to being in the air. You have been listening, of course, to live coverage of President Gorbachev's visit to Minnesota on the news and information stations of Minnesota Public Radio. During his 7 hours here, and it was almost exactly 7 hours, President Gorbachev met with business leaders. He lunched with Governor Perpich at the mansion. He is now, once that plane is in the air, on his way to San Francisco. Then he returns to the Soviet Union, where he has... the Soviet economy to deal with, ethnic unrest, the rise of Boris Yeltsin's popularity. Those things undoubtedly will occupy his time. Now you hear them spooling those jets up to take off power, and it will begin its takeoff roll and be in the air very, very shortly. Our live coverage of President Gorbachev's visit to the Twin Cities was made possible by the international public relations consulting firm of Padilla Spear Beardsley. We'd like to thank our studio guests, John Patrick Dale and Evelyn Davidheiser, for sitting with us for these many hours. The reporters for today's broadcast include Mike Mulcahy and Bruce McDonald at the airport, Catherine Winter and Karen Boris at the governor's mansion, with the gracious hospitality of the governor's neighbor, Minnesota Public Radio's good friend, Diane Fulmer. Lauren Omoto and Gail Marks Jarvis were in Minneapolis, and Joe Kelly was in Duluth. Also reporting in the field today, Chris Roberts and Chris Tetlin. Gary Eichten, my co-host, up at the state capitol for the first several hours of the broadcast, and Stephen Smith on the Gorbachev motorcade. As we listen in the background there, we hear a little of the plane taking off. The technical director for today's broadcast was Scott Yankus, with Patty Ray Rudolph at the controls for much of the day. Thanks also. And there the plane is up. It is in the air and heading out over the Twin Cities area, en route to San Francisco. The technical crew, as I mentioned, Scott Yankus with Patty Ray Rudolph, Rick Hebzinski, Stephanie DeSmit, Bill Nicholson, Bill Catlin, and Bill Wareham involved today as well. Thanks to Perry Finelli and Kathy Werzer, as well as our production assistants, Elizabeth Stewicki and Mark Zadeklik. Additional help from Sarah Meyer and Marlene Ruber. Research by Barb Naramore. Practically everybody in the Minnesota Public Radio News Department contributing to today's effort. The broadcast of Gorbachev in Minnesota, produced by Dan Olson with Kate Moose. The executive producer, George Boozy. I'm Bob Potter. Thank you for joining us today. This is Minnesota Public Radio, a member-supported service. You're tuned to KNOW, Minneapolis, St. Paul. In the Twin Cities now, cloudy skies, 51 degrees. The wind from the north at 17, low of 30 tonight. 19 minutes now before 9 o'clock. We now join All Things Considered in progress.